Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Good morning, folks. As we continue to report in the aftermath of the terrorist event that took place yesterday in the early morning hours, 3:15 to be exact, on Bourbon Street, it was reported on extensively by this station. And I first want to thank Dave Cohen and the rest of the team, Ian Hoke and so many others that were involved in yesterday's presentation of the news. They did a great job bringing things to the forefront, to light, as the details were revealing themselves throughout the day. A very emotional day, obviously, a day of, as so many people have said, sadness and anger at the same time. An individual by the name of Shamsuddin Jabbar, 42 years of age, Army veteran, one who decided to steal so many things from us here in New Orleans as we ramped up towards the Sugar Bowl, the hard work for an entire year, the lives of so many folks, 15 at last count, dozens in critical guarded condition in the hospitals throughout the city of New Orleans, families grieving, family members and friends of so many different people that were so important to our city, chose our city to come here to have a good time, to bring in the new year, to celebrate their teams, both Notre Dame and Georgia. On so many different fronts, so many different levels of emotion here. But this individual, to steal all of that from all of us, it hurts. It's a day of sadness. It truly is. And as we deal with this situation, there are a lot of things that we have to make sure and ensure that we represent ourselves well here in the city of New Orleans. Because as I look at this with the level, so many years of experience that I've had of dealing with so many tragic events, I think it's important to put this in context this morning. Pick a state, pick a city, pick an incident. Pick a location, anywhere in the world. And what happened yesterday can happen anywhere. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. To use a vehicle in going down a street or going down a sidewalk and intentionally hitting people, think about the days of your life where you were walking to or from an event or involved in Mardi Gras or involved in French Quarter Fest, Jazz Fest, the list goes on and on. Any number of times that you're walking on sidewalks, on streets, and otherwise to and from an event. Each and every one a prime target for someone who desires to do this in really not a very sophisticated way, right? So this incident is really not about the city of New Orleans. It's really about a mindset, a radicalization of those that want to destroy, the very freedoms that we have in this country that we enjoy. And it's because of these freedoms that these things actually happen. And it's unfortunate that it happens anywhere, and it was unfortunate, really unfortunate, that it happened here in the city of New Orleans yesterday at 3:15 a.m. But the fact of the matter is that as we address this and as we talk about this, I think it's important to keep things in context. We have a lot of talking heads right now, and in my view, yesterday we had far too many. This needs to be kept simple. The messaging needs to be kept tight. We need to stay on course as to what the mission at hand was. We had an event that unfortunately had to be canceled and had to be rescheduled, and we wanted to simply put people at rest and at ease as to what was going on. There's probably no safer day in the history of the city of New Orleans than today, quite frankly, going back to the nature and the context of what actually happened yesterday at 3:15 a.m. But keep in mind through all of this, security measures, security preventative measures, security protocols, however you want to refer to it, is about minimization of risk, not elimination of all risk, because that's impossible. This is just simply about minimization. And you deploy these measures in such a way to accomplish as much of that, depending on a number of characteristics that are available at that point in time. Buildings, sidewalks, streets, ingress, egress, lighting, the flow of traffic, the flow of pedestrians. Some you have control over, some you don't. Weather, for example, presents all kinds of security challenges as it relates to an adopted protocol. We need to make sure that we put all of that in context. But the fact of the matter is that it's all about minimization. Now, having said that, what was interesting is that we got very defensive yesterday during a press conference about bollards. I'm not so sure that that was a good time to talk about bollards. I'm not sure that there's going to be when the appropriate time is to talk about bollards. But I do know that there's one thing that is appropriate to talk about. If you, in fact, decide to deploy security measures, security protocols, whatever they may be, there is one thing for certain that has to happen. You must execute. Because you've gone through a process where you identified an area that you're trying to create a safe harbor. You're trying to minimize as much risk as possible. Obviously, Bourbon Street has been one of those, and the French Quarter, in a greater sense, has been identified as one of those pieces of real estate that we have decided is worthy of additional security measures to be deployed in advance of big events, or on a daily basis. And with that comes the obligation and the responsibility to execute. Plain and simple. I just was kind of, I don't know what the emotion was as I was listening to folks talking about how are we going to improve this, improve that, and do this, and do that, and what are we going to change, and this, and that, and otherwise. We've already gone through a lot of how we want things to actually happen. We simply did not execute. And even if it's just the bollards, and even if it's the design of the bollards, those things are things that should have been modified and should have been kept current for years on end, not waiting for a Super Bowl. If you have an escalator, you have an elevator, a piece of machinery that's in a building, you don't wait till you're going to have a big event at the building to make sure that it in fact works. You do the PM, the preventive maintenance. You make the investment in it. You have already decided that that's an area that you need to move a lot of people, in the example of elevators and escalators, so you keep the machinery going.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You make whatever changes that you have based on the experience set that you have, whether or not these bollards are, you know, appropriate to be used at these certain locations or not. And it should always, always be operational until they break, and in a short period of time until they're fixed. So they're ready and available to be utilized because you've already made the decision that this is an area that you want to minimize as much risk as possible. And if it takes additional measures to minimize as much risk as possible in the immediate area of the bollards that don't fully protect that area of geography, you place additional measures if you believe that is important enough to do so, whether or not that's the placing of jersey barriers, cars, sand-filled trucks, whatever it may be that you utilize there so that folks can't drive down sidewalks. But the focus really ought to be on execution, not on anything else. There was a story that was reported yesterday, and I haven't been able to find it this morning, that 11 of 16 areas where we have the bollards are now operational. And I'm somewhat curious whether or not anybody is going to tell us whether or not they were in fact utilized and whether or not they executed them as part of the security protocols yesterday, leading during the Taylor Swift concert, during the New Orleans Bowl, during the Christmas holiday season, or in other occasions. It would be interesting to know these things. Because this isn't really about the bollards, this is about the execution. It's about the execution of maintenance. It's about the execution of the utilization of the security measure that we decided many, many years ago that was worthy of a public investment to try and create a situation where we would minimize risk. Plain and simple. It's an obvious question to be asked when you think about it, because they're there, they're apparent, we know about them, we've seen them utilized before or otherwise. But I go back to my original statement, pick a street, pick a time, pick a city, pick a state, pick any place in the world. And there's these opportunities. We are not going to bollard our way to a completely and totally safe situation. These individuals are flexible. They're nimble. They decide. They control when things are going to happen. And they're looking for the opportunities when we are stretched to the max, right? And they're looking for the opportunities to make the biggest splash, so to speak, from a public perspective. I don't want to say a public relations standpoint, but that's exactly what they do, to perpetuate whatever message it is that they're trying to perpetuate at that point in time. A lot of this is going to go to our intelligence infrastructure, our homeland security. It's not just local police. It's not just state police. It's all three levels, federal, state, and local. The sharing of intelligence information, the identification of as many folks as you can, again, to minimize risk, because you're not going to eliminate all risk and you're not going to identify every bad actor. Absolutely, positively impossible. But it doesn't mean that you don't spend the time, the effort, and the money in the development of an infrastructure to collect as much data as possible, to consume, digest, go through it, and see whether or not they rise high enough on the matrix to take additional action in looking at these individuals. And certainly when you have high-profile events, playoff games, and
the college world and others. You know, there's a lot of this that's put into place as it relates to the Super Bowl. Historically, they have been a designated event. The nomenclature has changed over the years, but it's still a heightened event that gets a lot of attention from a lot of different resources. And maybe that's something that has to change as well. Again, it's a minimization of risk, not an elimination of risk. When we make statements that we're going to make a place, a piece of geography safe, it's a little bit misleading. We're going to do things in the best way that we can, best based upon the resources that we have, to minimize risk. That's why you, as the attendees, with your eyes, your ears, and everything else, are equally as important to any intelligence network that we may have, because you're seeing things real time. See, if you see something, you say something, you report on something. Act on your gut. Your gut is typically right. You know what fits and what doesn't fit in your respective neighborhoods and respectful individual environments, excuse me. You grew up here. You know how things work. Trust your gut. Report on it. This will continue to reveal itself. I'm really confident that the FBI and the state police and the NOPD and all the other law enforcement agencies throughout the metropolitan area that have come in to lend a hand to the city in its time of need are going to figure this out. All right, we're going to go to Dave Cohen. We have this news conference coming up. Dave?
And in fact, it sounds like the governor is at the podium. Here we go.
I first want to start off by reminding the citizens of Louisiana that as you travel around the state, you will see the flags of all state buildings at half mast in honor of those lives that were lost in this horrific act of violence. I also think that it's important to remember that what happened yesterday was akin to those who are old enough to remember jigsaw puzzles, and that you would take a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle and you empty the box and you've got to start sifting through those pieces. And you want to start, if you're real good, you start at the corners, right? Try to put your corners together. And from yesterday to today, over 1,000 law enforcement agents and officers, men and women, have been poring over countless amounts of data, of videos, of surveillances, interviews, tracking down every possible lead that came to us, whether it was the New Orleans Police Department, the Louisiana State Police, the FBI, or our other federal agencies. Also yesterday, I issued an emergency declaration. That declaration was meant to streamline resources and communications between state, local, and federal partners. And we're seeing the results of it. I also would like to remind everyone that what's going on in this city and this state is twofold. We've got an active criminal investigation going on, while we're also continuing to secure the city in preparation for 3 o'clock kickoff time for the Sugar Bowl. With that, I would also remind those who are in the city that as far as state resources are concerned, we have the Louisiana State Police, the Louisiana National Guard, which was part of that emergency declaration, which allowed us to put an entire MP company on the ground. Those become force multipliers, is what we call that in law enforcement in the military. That helps to add to the resources that we have. Wildlife and Fisheries, the Department of Corrections, DSF, DHS, our Veterans Affairs, our probation and parole, all state agencies, any state agency who has post-certified offices are here in this city to help secure the city. And so with that, I would like to turn it over to Christopher Rea, who is the Deputy Assistant Director of the FBI's Counter Terrorism Division. Chris?
Thank you, Governor Landry. Good morning. I am FBI Deputy Assistant Director Christopher Rea. I'm from our Counterterrorism Division at headquarters. I'm also joined by Assistant Special Agent in Charge Alethea Duncan from our New Orleans office, who you heard from yesterday. I'm here to discuss not only the latest investigative information we have here in New Orleans, but also let you know about other investigative activities outside of the state. I first, and most importantly, want to send our deepest condolences to the victims of this horrific attack and their loved ones. 14 innocent victims were killed in this senseless attack, and at least 35 are injured. We cannot ease the grief people in this community and across the nation are feeling at this time, but rest assured, we stand with you and in support of you. All the resources, and I'm going to go into that a little bit later, all the resources of the FBI are being focused on tracking down every piece of evidence, every lead, every interview, every potential lead we've got. While I won't be able to answer all your questions today, my goal is to be as forthcoming as possible with you on what we've uncovered so far. First and foremost, let me be very clear about this point. This was an act of terrorism. It was premeditated and an evil act. This was obviously a critical incident, and with that, lots of information and tips come pouring in from law enforcement, first responders, and the public. We have been aggressively running down these tips and information. As you all know, that takes time, and we will continue to do so until every lead has been followed through on. This investigation is only a little more than 24 hours old. So I ask you to keep in mind that as I go through some of the specifics later. But at this point, currently, and this is another fact I want to be clear on, we do not assess at this point that anyone else involved in this attack is involved in this attack except for Shamsuddin Jabbar, the subject you've already been briefed on. A little bit about what the FBI is doing. So we are surging people and assets to the area from across the region and across the nation. Special agents in multiple field offices across the country have been deployed and are assisting with potential aspects of this investigation and following up on every lead. Additional teams of special agents, professional staff, and victim specialists continue to arrive to provide more investigative power and assistance to the victims and their families. We've also forward deployed a number of our critical incident response group assets, including members of our hostage rescue team, special agent bomb technicians, and crisis management coordinators. In addition, we have deployed more evidence response technicians to continue to process the various scenes that we have. So far, we have received just over 400 tips from the public, and that information is being followed up on both here in New Orleans and across the country. Some of the tips are here in New Orleans, and there are other tips in other states across the country that we are following up on. The FBI team and our law enforcement partners here are also reviewing hundreds of hours of surveillance and other video from both the French Quarter and other locations. As for a timeline, at this point, investigators believe Jabbar picked up the rented F-150 in Houston, Texas on December 30th. He then drove from Houston to New Orleans on the evening of the 31st, and he posted several videos to an online platform proclaiming his support for ISIS. There were 5 videos posted on Jabbar's Facebook account, which are time-stamped beginning at 1:29 a.m. and the last at 3:02 a.m. In the first video, Jabbar explains he originally planned to harm his family and friends, but was concerned the news headlines would not focus on the, quote, war between the believers and the disbelievers, end quote. Additionally, he stated he had joined ISIS before this summer. He also provided a will and testament. FBI and ATF. We have a couple different scenes at the location. We have released the scene at Bourbon Street. That scene has been released. We also have a scene off of Mandeville address where we're currently searching that scene right now. FBI and ATF agents have secured that house, and that location is being searched for potential evidence. On New Year's morning, Jabbar opened fire after ramming through a blocked-off area of Bourbon Street, used his truck as a weapon to run over the victims. Teams of specially trained victim specialists, again, as I said, are on the ground here in New Orleans, assisting survivors of the attack and loved ones of the deceased. We do not believe the public is in any danger around any of these locations. Three phones linked to Jabbar have been recovered, and digital media exploitation is a priority to see what is on the devices and determine if there are any other potential leads. Additionally, we have recovered two laptops and are currently reviewing them for any potential leads. Those laptops were recovered at the Mandeville address. Evidence technicians will also be going over the F-150 truck Jabbar was driving. As you know, we recovered an ISIS flag from the back of the vehicle. Jabbar declared his support for the terrorist group on social media, as I stated before, as he made his way to New Orleans. FBI bomb technicians also recovered two IEDs in coolers, one from the cross section of Bourbon and Orleans Street, and the second at an intersection approximately two blocks away. There were multiple reports of other devices. Those reports turned out to be misinformation or not actual functioning devices. Those are the only two devices that we've been able to recover that were functional. Both devices were rendered safe on scene. We did obtain surveillance footage showing Jabbar placing the devices where they were found. Two other items of interest were determined not to be IEDs. A little bit about Jabbar. Jabbar himself was born in the United States and is a U.S. military veteran. We are looking in everything in his life. While we have interviewed many people who know Jabbar, we still need to talk to others. Whether you know Jabbar personally, worked with him, served in the military, or saw him in New Orleans or Texas, we need to talk to you. You may not think you have relevant information, but what you know could tie in to one of our investigative leads. Specifically, we want to talk to anyone who was in the French Quarter on New Year's Eve or early on New Year's Day. That includes people spotted near one of the two IEDs on Bourbon Street. The IED was inside a cooler, and many people stopped and looked at the cooler and then continued on their way. Let's be clear, again, we do not believe at this point these people are involved in this incident in any way. We want to speak to them as witnesses and want to know what they saw and when. I went down to the crime scene last night. It is very hard to put into words what it looked like and how difficult it was to see. Anyone with information can call us at 1-800-CALL-FBI or send digital tips to FBI.gov/Bourbon Street Attack. Early this morning, evidence response teams finished their work at the crime scene. Bourbon Street has been turned over to the city of New Orleans. As you know, there's also an FBI investigation in Las Vegas. We are following up on all potential leads and not ruling everything out. However, at this point, there is no definitive link between the attack here in New Orleans and the one in Las Vegas. And again, I'll preface, as I close, I'll preface everything with what I started with in the beginning, which was, this is very early in an investigation like this. Again, our thoughts and prayers are with the victims of this tragedy and everyone impacted across the country. They remain at the heart of our investigation. I also, although I've only been on the ground here a short time, I also want to express a sincere appreciation for our partners here, which include the U.S. Attorney's Office, HSI, ATF, the New Orleans PD, the Louisiana State Police, the Governor's Office, and countless others. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to the special agent in charge of ATF here, Josh Jackson.
Hey, good afternoon. As stated, my name is Joshua Jackson. I am the special agent in charge for the ATF New Orleans Field Division. And ATF's primary mission is preventing, reducing, and solving violent crime throughout the United States and abroad. Solving part is the focus of this investigation. ATF resources that have been brought to bear to the city and to focus with our federal, state, and local partners have been our national response team. We spoke about the scene that's still being processed now. The National Response Team of ATF is a team of certified fire investigators, certified explosive specialists, fire engineers, electrical engineers. These folks will give us additional investigative leads to help the investigative team identify what happened at the location in Mandeville and identify how that fire started and move the investigation forward from there. Additional resources that ATF has brought to bear into the city. As our ATF special response team, this is a tactical team capable of handling any sort of enforcement operation. This team is deployed, on set, and ready for the Sugar Bowl today. This team is also made available to the Louisiana State Police and also New Orleans Police Department to assist with any efforts that they may have during this period. Additional resources, as the governor alluded to, he executed executive powers and had an emergency declared to where we are able, ATF was able to tap in to emergency support function 13 resources. This allowed us to bring additional explosive detection canines so that we can safely sweep the city and safely sweep the Super Bowl in preparation for the game today. These resources will still be in the city as we lead up through up to the Super Bowl and through Mardi Gras. These type of ATF resources will be here. The last resources ATF has brought to bear, and probably the most important one, is our victim witness coordinators. These folks come in and they provide resources to the victims and the family members that have suffered greatly during this tragedy. The entire city hurts, but the victims and the family members are in need of resources and care long after this investigation wraps up. This time next year, it'll be hard for the families and friends who suffered during this event. So our victim witness coordinators are working with the FBI, the city of New Orleans coordinators to provide resources to these folks out here. And as we move forward, ATF will be committed. We will work with the investigative team moving this investigation forward, but also we'll be here to make sure the city is safe and prepared as we move into the Super Bowl. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our mayor of this great city, New Orleans, Madam Mayor.
Thank you so much. Well, good morning once again. And I just want to just echo my thank yous to the unified command of our law enforcement partners and at every single level, federal, state, and governor. Governor, thank you for your partnership.
Yeah.
Thank you. I also want to thank the residents and the visitors of the city of New Orleans for your patience, for your support, and most of all, your prayers. Our hearts and prayers continue to go out to the victims' families, and the city of New Orleans, we're resilient. And as I stated on yesterday, my focus in terms of a priority has been on our victims. As you heard, that yes, the FBI was able to clear Bourbon Street. And what that meant also for me in this city was that we were able to remove our victims, identify them, and notify their families. Real reverence. They mattered. The families matter and matter to the city of New Orleans. In addition to that, I want to just thank again our federal partners in Washington listening to my plea personally for the additional resources to allow for the scene to be cleared and again attending to our victims. I walk by each one and I did the sign of cross in my own way because reverence again is important. So while we have been able to have Bourbon Street returned back to the city of New Orleans, and the due diligence has been done, that then allowed me to give the go-ahead to begin the cleaning of Bourbon Street. That started happening in the morning about 2 a.m. It was completed before 8 a.m. this morning. But that has really set the tone, I would say, and with the confidence that I have in the law enforcement partners, all of the resources that have been activated, how we have made sure that safety continues to be our top priority, how our assets have been deployed strategically, again, for the safety and the protection of our visitors and our residents in the city. And because of that, the confidence is there to reopen Bourbon Street to the public prior to game time today. The first order will be to allow for vendors to come in and service the businesses. That's important in order for us to stand up activation, as you know, Governor. And so with that, I want to reassure the public that the city of New Orleans is not only ready for game day today, but we're ready to continue to host large-scale events in our city because we are built to host at every single turn. I want to, again, thank all of those who responded to the FBI's call for information and tips. As you heard, that has been useful. Continue to do that. The investigation is still active and absolutely under the FBI's leadership. We will continue to operate and cooperate as we always have. So I want to also thank all of our partners for the added resources for victim and crisis management. We know that that's, again, important. Working with our partner, the Greater New Orleans Foundation, we have set up a fund for our victims' families for not only today but into the future. As you heard, this is going to be a long process for our people. So with that, the city of New Orleans, and with all of my confidence, we are ready. And we could not get here again without the unified presence, support, and cooperation. We are stronger together. And I want to say again, thank you so much. Thank you, Governor.
Listening to a live news conference on WWL.
So, once again, the governor would like me to reiterate that Bourbon Street will be prepared for full activation before game time today. We know 3 p.m., so we're working towards 2:30 p.m. But prior to game time, the kickoff, Bourbon Street will be restored. So we're hard at work now. Our teams are now, and of course, working with our business community to serve our public and serve our residents and our visitors alike.
In closing, I want to rest people assured that right now in the city of New Orleans, there is an unprecedented amount of law enforcement resources that are being utilized to close out and to hunt down and to finalize this investigation. I want to thank the FBI and all of our federal partners for the amount of resources they have poured into the city. This type of event can happen in any city. And that's the tragedy of it. And I think it's important for people to understand that to protect our citizens in America from evil, you have to crush it. You can't go out there and placate it. You can't go out there and say, oh, I'm going to put this in place and that in place and hope that evil doesn't show up on your doorstep, because it will. You have to crush it. And that's what we're going to do here. We're going to put it all behind us. We're going to continue to keep the victims, those that are in the hospital, either fighting for their lives or trying to recover, in our thoughts and in our prayers. But you know, this morning, and I don't want to single out just one news source, but I just happened to turn on Fox and Friends, and that was a young man who was interviewed, who was actually on Bourbon Street during this horrific act of terrorism. And they closed out by asking him, what now? And I think he summed it up. He said, look, we can't live in fear, because fear will paralyze us. He said, we come down to the city to enjoy ourselves and to entertain ourselves and to be with our friends and with our families, because that's who we are. Louisiana invented hospitality. The people in this city care for each other. And believe you me, we care about each one of the lives that were lost in the city of that. We will never forget them. But it would be a tragedy if we let their losses be snuffed out because of fear. This city will be back. We'll be open to family and friends and loved ones who want some time to relax from the pressures of life. And so today, we're going to have us a sugar bowl. We're going to enjoy ourselves. We're going to keep those who have lost loved ones in mind. And we're going to get on to the business of this city and this great country. With that, I'll take any questions.
Governor, this is for you and the assistant director. The message has really changed since yesterday. Yesterday, the FBI said that people should be vigilant, that he did not act alone, that he likely had help. And now you're coming out the very next day and saying he was a lone wolf. Everything is safe. The game moves on. Everybody had a good time. How can you be so sure just 12 hours later?
Well, we're going to bring him up. All right, but here's what I want to remind everyone. Like, I was a deputy sheriff, right? I worked in a jail, I worked on the street, I worked on the interstate, I served warrants, I can tell you. Look, in today's world, I get it. Information, we get information like that. Everybody lives in a 15-second TikTok video. We think that life operates like it does on our phones, and it just doesn't. Information changes. In fact, that's why we ask the media for patience. We get information, like I said, no one dumps a 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle and puts it together in 5 seconds. Okay? And what I would tell you is that I appreciate the fact that what we did was we're under-promising and over-delivering today. And I think that's important. And I want to remind something. Look, because over the last decade, law enforcement has taken it on the chin, unfairly. And there are great men and women serving in the FBI, in ATF, in Louisiana State Police, in New Orleans PD. Our sheriffs have been unbelievable in this. And I tell you, they want to protect you all. And we have to trust them. And sometimes the information we put out, we end up finding out that it may be incorrect. But guess what? What we're doing here is something I think is important. It's called transparency. And look, something may change again. Here's what I do know, though. Right now, this is one of the safest places on earth. That doesn't mean that nothing can't happen.
Thank you, Governor. And to echo exactly, I think the governor put it eloquently, as Khabib said. In a lot of these instances, I also had the opportunity to deploy a boss bomb, and I will tell you, this is almost carbon copy to boss bomb as far as the inaccurate reporting that comes up. And what the governor said is, we want to be transparent with the public. Years of the FBI not being transparent, we're being as transparent as we possibly can. Unfortunately, as we're being transparent, unfortunately for that, there is some information that we have to go back and recorrect. And in this particular incident, you heard the resources that we brought, that the other state and locals have brought. We've had 24 hours now to go through media, to go through phones, to interview people, to analyze those videos, analyze other databases. And after all of that, there's been hundreds and hundreds of leads done just in 24 hours. We're confident at this point that there is no accomplices. And I'll give you an idea of how that information sometimes, a lot of the early reports came out that there were people that, extra people that were setting the coolers down, right? It turns out those were just patrons on the street that were looking inside the coolers, right? Well, we didn't know that at first, so we had to kind of track all that down and put that to rest. So that's just an example, one of the pieces of information. But there were other pieces of information that after we got our feet under us a little bit and on the ground here, we were able to put together a much more accurate picture of the subject and his attention.
Just one follow-up. The updated death toll, we just wanted to double check.
Yes.
14, yeah. Not 15? Sorry, yeah.
14, and then the shooter himself would be 15 total, right, to include the shooter.
Were the IEDs pipe-bombs, and have you discovered a remote detonator anywhere? And when you said that you have surveillance footage of the suspect planting those IEDs, what time roughly were they planted?
Yeah. Those roughly a couple hours. I don't have the exact times in front of me. A couple hours prior to the attack, probably after midnight. After midnight, I want to say 1 or 2 in the morning,
so
but I can't.
Left the area and came back.
Correct. That's our assumption now. I mean, we still have a lot to work through. We're getting more surveillance video and everything else, but that's the assumption.
Was he wearing suicide vests? Being done on Bourbon Street. Would there have been canines out on New Year's Eve? Would there have been bomb sweeps done?
Look, let me just say this, and either Joe or Rob will correct me. Look, a bomb dog doesn't operate like a drug dog, right? They on Bourbon Street has a lot of senses, right? A lot of smells. I don't think you can run a bomb dog down Bourbon Street with thousands of people there and be able to sniff out a bomb. What we've been doing, what they have been doing, is certainly a complete sweep of the quarter. Because of the limited amount of traffic that's been out there. Let me just say this. I think this may help. It would be my hope that as some additional time goes through, maybe closer to the beginning of next week, we will, if we've got it to what extent buttoned up as we could, I would work with the FBI and the city, and maybe we can come up with a timeline to be able to get you those informations, kind of walk everyone through from day one through. I think it's extremely premature, and you're really putting us on some speculative grounds to ask some of those questions, because again, it's only been 24 hours. I mean, can you imagine how far we've come in 24 hours?
So was
he wearing the Well, we'll go one at a time.
What is being done to make Bourbon Street safer tonight than it was New Year's Eve? Are temporary bollards being brought in to block off the street, and why weren't those used on New Year's Eve?
Well, look, here's what I'm going to say. Every time some bad guy does something like this, there's what we call an after-action review. Because, again, nothing is 100%. We have reinforced the area. We have deployed some additional types of assets. I personally, it's up to the city or other, I don't like to give specifics because I don't like to tell the enemy what we got. But I can tell you we're in better shape than we were before.
We have time for two more questions.
Dr. Manette, can you speak to the Mandeville scene? Some neighbors at that site told us they smelled smoke early in the morning. Was there a fire there? Any kind of burning happening?
Yeah,
do you still believe that fire happened after the suspect was killed?
That's correct. Yeah, I'll move to 18. I do want to address the suicide vest question. I want to kill that one right away. Okay. There was no evidence that the subject was wearing a suicide vest at all. So I will turn the Mandeville stuff over to ATF.
Yeah, as to the fire at the Mandeville scene, so our working theory now is that the fire started after Jabbar was already deceased. There's a lot of different ways that could happen. You could have different time devices. You could have a long cord that extended that time. You could also have pressure cookers that were put on top of the stove filled with gasoline, and then it went off. There's a lot of different ways to do it, but that is why our ATF National Response Team is here to answer those questions and get that investigative lead back to our team. So more to come on that. We're still processing that scene. We're out there right now.
Are you able to understand about how he became radicalized over all of this time? What brought him to Bourbon Street? Do we understand, was there any international travel involved? What led him down this path to this sort of radicalization?
Sure, a lot of questions we're still asking ourselves. We know that he specifically picked out Bourbon Street. Not quite sure why. I mean, I think one can assume that it was lots of people, New Year's Eve, with a target for an attack. That's the stuff in the coming days as far as that path to radicalization that we're really going to be digging into and making a priority of. So what I can tell you right now is that he was 100% inspired by ISIS. And so we're digging through more of the social media, more interviews, working with some of our other partners to ascertain just how to ascertain a little bit more about that connection.
We're going to do one more. Kate?
Right there. You put your hand up for a while. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. It's actually for Special Agent Ryan.
Sir, I prefer those. I'm going to check.
In order to reassure people, would you be able to explain the analysis and evidence that has led to this most recent understanding that he was a lone actor and that there is, at this point, at least from your understanding, no further danger to the public?
Sure. I think a lot of that, multiple interviews, the hundreds of interviews that we've conducted so far, the social media review that we've done of his accounts, the five devices we have, the three cell phones and the two laptops, been able to initially triage or go through that, and there is just nothing to indicate through call records, through anything on those devices, through interviews, through anything in our systems that he was aided in this attack by anybody. And again, I have to caveat, like the governor said, this is 24 hours into it, and that could change, but right now we've got a much better picture and much more confidence on what we were dealing with than we were just 24
Mayor,
hours.
All right, look, thank you all so very much. Again, we are going to try to get y'all as much information as possible, so any additional information will be put out through press releases. Thank you so very much.
You've been listening to a live news conference here on WWL with federal, state, and local authorities from the Benson Tower across from the Louisiana Superdome as they prepare to play the Sugar Bowl in the Superdome here in just 4 hours. The major announcements out of this news conference, FBI Deputy Assistant Director Christopher Rea says they are now confident, based on what they know at this point in the investigation, that 42-year-old Shamsun Dijabar acted alone. He said, "We are confident at this point there are no accomplices." He says initial information after the terror attack on Bourbon Street at 3:15 a.m. yesterday morning had suggested others may have been involved, but he says at this point they are confident that he worked alone and was 100% inspired by ISIS. The other major announcement, Bourbon Street is being cleaned, is being restocked, and will be reopened at 2:30 this afternoon. I'm Dave Cohen. Newell Norman rejoining us now. Newell, what did you take away from what we just heard?
I'm not surprised that there's a change, right? And I said that yesterday, and I think you said it as well. Things that were moving fast. It was a very fluid situation. They were revealing details that they were evaluating and drawing conclusions from at that point in time, but not necessarily any of that etched in concrete, right? So it does not surprise me that this changes. Yet a lot of different scenes, a lot of different things happening, a lot of different concerns because of the event and so forth, and obviously stretched early onset from a human capital perspective. And then once you started to get all of the assets and resources collected and together, local law enforcement responding in addition to the NOPD and federal authorities, and you were able to work your way through a number of these interviews and starting to piece together a lot of video evidence that they were able to bring together, the story starts to reveal itself in a little bit of a different way, and I think that's what we saw today.
Yeah, and you can see logically how they explained it. You have bombs in coolers sitting on Bourbon Street, and you have video showing people picking up, moving, opening, or otherwise touching or manipulating those coolers. A short video or a still image could lead you to believe that person was somehow involved in placing that cooler and that bomb there. But they say they've identified all of those people, reviewing hours and hours of video, 400 tips they've already reviewed that have come in. And they have now definitely decided that they don't believe any of those people were involved, just curious individuals looking at what they probably never even realized were bombs.
Yeah, and I think by this late afternoon, early evening, probably at some point in time after the game, ATF will probably be in a position to reveal what actually occurred at the Mandeville location with the delayed start of a fire. They're believing that that there may have been some delay apparatus that was utilized, maybe to act as a diversion or whatever. Who knows what goes on in the mind of this individual, right? And we'll learn more about that in the coming hours, for sure. Interestingly, and I guess the President Joe Biden revealed it first last evening, Dave, about this connection with ISIS. And today they come out and said that there's no doubt he was 100% inspired by ISIS, and they believe that this transformation began sometime before this past summer, which I thought was very interesting new news.
We did not hear it in this news conference, but we have been hearing reporting out of Houston that the suspect had been going through an ugly divorce, that the mother of his three children had gotten custody of the children, that at some point prior to 2 years ago, he had lost his job and had accumulated excessive credit card debt. There are a lot of indications that he was down and out, living apparently in some sort of trailer or camper in North Houston. And it does raise a lot of questions about people who face very difficult circumstances in life being more vulnerable to then being turned, I guess, for lack of a better term, to idealists like the Islamic State.
Well, I think it's safe to call it radicalization, right, at this point, based on what has been revealed by the FBI. And we know that that comes in different shapes and sizes and forms and is motivated both intellectually and emotionally by a lot of different life experiences and the way that people react to it. That's going to be a very interesting part of the story about what brought him to the point, as they said early, at some point in time before this summer, and what brought him here to New Orleans. I think there was some news reporting this morning, Dave, that he intended to move to New Orleans, which was an interesting tidbit as well.
Also revealed that the videos he posted prior to committing this terror attack, he had initially considered murdering friends and family, perhaps in Houston, but then decided that would not send the message that he wanted or get ISIS's message across to the world. And that at some point he decided, no, he was going to go to New Orleans and kill people on Bourbon Street. In those videos, he also said he had joined ISIS. We are awaiting confirmation of that, and provided a last will and testament supporting the speculation we have heard previously that he was ready to, willing to, and expected to die while committing this attack. Police said in that Airbnb on Mandeville Street, they also recovered phones and laptops from both the truck and that Airbnb, and those will provide much more information. Newell, I know you'll have much more to share with our listeners coming up here on WWL New Orleans, WWL FM and HD1 Kenner New Orleans. Right now, we're going to take a break for the news.